Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and fights. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts. Guy English is here. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Guy English, Captain Canada.
John Moltz is here. John, take it easy before it gets weird.
I will just say hi.
Okay. We are here to discuss Falcon and the Winter Soldier, currently airing on Disney Plus. If you didn't know that, where have you been?
Did we ever mention that? I guess I didn't.
I mentioned it at the beginning of every episode for this particular reason.
Okay. Well, that's weird. We are driving a lot of traffic to Disney Plus. Many people haven't heard of Disney Plus.
That's true. Brand new show. Brand new. All the Biff Plus listeners have moved to Disney Plus. We are here this week to discuss episode 4 of the Walken family, Walken and Bucky. Walken,
I swear to God, Walken and Bucky would be hilarious.
Listen, I'm going to tell you.
Bucky.
We're going to take the shield.
Sam, you and me, we'll take the shield.
Sorry.
All right.
I really did want to do a tight show, but I'm going to be laughing about Christopher Walken and Bucky hanging out the whole time.
Did you see the thing where about the, getting him to say Foo Fighters?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I love that Dave Grohl, and they told him to punch the wrong syllable, and it's so funny.
All right.
Let's discuss
The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, episode 4, entitled The Whole World is Watching, and the whole world is watching. John Moltz, who's taking on recap duties this week.
Okie doke. We open on a flashback to Wakanda 6 years ago. Bucky is sitting in a fire, and Io repeats his programming words to him as he flashes back to all the terrible, terrible things he's done. But he gets through it as himself, and she tells him that he's free. Cry, cry, cry. Fast forward to today when she berates him for freeing Zemo. She gives him 8 hours before they come for him. He returns to the safe house where they find out that about Carly's bombing. Now she has a list of demands. She's getting awfully angry. Zemo says Carly is a supremacist because she's now superhuman and has to be killed. Sam wants to try talking to her and suggests trying to find out where Donya's funeral will be. They head to the refugee compound where Sam and Bucky very awkwardly ask about Donya while everyone runs away from them. Zemo, meanwhile, creepily uses Trickish Delight to get a little girl to tell him what they want to know. And then he warns them off of Sam and Bucky. We can probably talk about that later. They go back to the safe house, and Sam continues to defend Carly. Bucky threatens Zemo, and Sam calls Sharon and asks for her help getting eyes on the camp. And Carly and Nico go to go to a graveyard to retrieve the vials of serum. Nico says that he was a Captain America fan as a kid, and she's like Cap to him. They sort of rag on the shield and then go to the funeral. Walker and Lamar catch up to Sam, Bucky, and Zemo. Walker is not down with trying to reason with Carly, but Lamar says it's worth a try. The little girl leads them all to the funeral, and Walker gives Sam 10 minutes. Then he handcuffs Zemo to a furnace or giant oven or something. Carly sees Sam
What is that thing?
It's an industrial area. It's fine.
It's industrial. Thanks. Dance.
I said it's an industrial area. I mean, it's like a factory or something.
Yeah.
Carly sees Sam while she's speaking over Donya's body. Sam talks to her and tells her he understands her frustration and helplessness. Walker is having a hard time waiting just 10 freaking minutes and says he's going in. Sam asks Carly what she's going to do with the serum. He says he agrees with her fight, but not the way that she's fighting it. Then Walker barges in. Little fight, and Carly gets away. Zemo slips out of the cuffs and shoots Carly. Then he smashes the vials get knocked over, and Zemo smashes them all but one before Walker knocks him out with the shield. Carly escapes, and Walker picks up the last vial. We all know where this is going. The power broker texts another threat to Carly. Carly says they're going to separate the group and kill Walker. Zemo asks Sam if he would have taken the serum, and he says immediately no. Walker barges in, which is what he does apparently, and demands Zemo. The Dora Milaje come in, and Walker's kind of a jerk to them, and fight. Io wipes the floor with him, and Zemo escapes. Io deactivates Bucky's arm and it falls off. Walker is sad that he's not super. He and Lamar talk about the serum. He says being Cap is his first chance to do something that feels right. Carly calls Sarah and says she's trying to figure out if she needs to kill Sam. She tells her to tell Sam that she wants to meet with him, and then she threatens Sarah's family. Sam and Bucky suit up and go to meet Carly, who said she'd never hurt Sarah. She says, join me or let me go. Sarah alerts Sam that Walker's moving in. Sam and Bucky head off after him. Walker and Lamar separate, and Lamar gets taken hostage and tied up. Walker is kind of looking twitchy. Fighting a flag smasher when Sam shows up and sees him bend a metal bar. He's like, oh no. Lamar frees himself while Sam, Bucky, and Walker fight the flag smashers. Two of them grab Walker, and Carly runs in and is about to stab him when Lamar tackles her. She throws him off and then hits him in the chest. Lamar flies through the air and hits a column and thumps to the floor dead. Everybody freezes. Then Walker goes to Lamar and the flag smashers escape. Walker realizes Lamar is dead and chases after them. He catches Nico in a public square. Nico says it wasn't him, and Walker hammers him to death with the shield while everyone records it on their phones. Carly escapes, and we get the final chilling image of Walker standing there with a bloody shield.
Woof!
Yeah.
Yeah, so if last week was like kind of a muddy mess with some bright points, I feel like this week is like the inverse. Like, really solid with a few rough edges that need to be sanded off.
Yeah. Still a little muddy. But
yeah, but I think overall, the through line is very clear in this episode, right? Oh, like, where we start and where we end, I feel like there is a very straight line through all those events, and there's not a lot of confusion, I think, about sort of what the thematically what we're talking about, even if there are some rough plot edges here and there.
I don't know. I feel like that final shot of Cap with blood all over the really shield
left a lot of room for interpretation.
A little ambiguous.
Yeah.
I mean, yikes.
That's a great shot. It really
it
is.
The other great shot, the other great shot is right before that, which I slowed down to watch at one point. Was like Ricky's. He's
lifting
got his mouth open and he's raising the shield just before he hits him the first time.
Yeah, there's a lot good in there. And, you know, we've I think all been clear this is what we've been kind of building to with Walker. I think the biggest question with him is, so I saw somebody speculating that, like, you know, they thought we might get flashbacks next week to sort of how Walker got to the point of being Cap. Like,
no, who cares?
His story?
No, I think because the conversations that he has with Lamar this week about whatever earned him, you know, the medals in Afghanistan, they talk about, like, what we did there was not the kind of thing that felt like we should be getting medals for. And a lot of that is a meta commentary, I think, on the differences between, or at least the perceived differences between the wars that we have fought in the 21st century and the wars that, say, Steve was fighting, right? World War II, right? Where it's like, they talk a lot about the things were very black and white. And now it's much more gray. You know, Carly and Nico have that conversation in the graveyard and stuff like that. And there's a lot of parallels drawn this week, which I think is really interesting. Like, that scene also with Lamar and Walker has somebody coming up and asking for Walker's autograph.
Mm-hmm.
And both that and the scene where Sam gets basically, you know, all the refugees run away from him in the camp are kind of direct mirrors to Sam in Morocco in that first episode where the guy comes up to him and, like, thanks him for bringing his family back. Which I think is really, like, a great way to play with that dynamic of, like, you know, I'm used to being the hero and all of a sudden these people don't trust me.
I don't think Sam's ever used to being the hero, though.
I don't think in the way that he takes it for granted necessarily. So much as that he is, like, I think he does feel like he's trying to do the right thing, and he's surprised that no one will kind of hear him out a little more.
I think is completely true. Yeah, but I think Walker expects to be the hero. Like, he wants that signature. Like, he wants that sort of adoration. And even when Lamar kind of teases him, he's like, oh, you're just jealous because they didn't ask for your signature. And Lamar's like, well, you know, I've even got, like, a cute little Battlestar logo, which, I mean, I would make fun of that guy, but he has been probably one of the most solid characters on the show. That
Yeah.
Not happy with the way that turned out.
Yeah. No. Walker seems like the guy who's taking... I think he wants the serum because he thinks it will fix something with him. And that is the interesting question to me is like, because as John pointed out in the recap, and I wrote in my notes, he is very twitchy and very erratic in a lot of this episode. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we really understand that side of it. We've only seen him portrayed as like, you know, the military picked him because he was so good. And he comes across in the beginning of episode two, he comes across as very charming, right? When he's doing his interview and he's trying to be all shucks. There's something else underneath that, though.
Yeah. So when they meet Zemo to, I don't know, they're about to meet his contact, which is a 10-year-old girl, which is its own weird little thing.
What, you don't think a creepy dude giving him candy is a... That's not a good play? That's...
not great. No. I wouldn't go down that path myself, but, you know. He's real twitchy. If you watch him, just he's walking behind them all. First of all, he looks like an idiot dressed as Captain America when they're all just like he looks so out of place.
Yeah, with even a giant shield on his back with a crazy fur coat, it looks normal compared to
He's blending in. He's like, okay, that's a guy with some weird style. Like Captain America just sticks out like a sore thumb. Captain America, this whatever void rage cap. But he's twitching, man, and you can tell that he's on edge and he's. He walks in front of them and he's like, no, we can't discuss this. Like, the time for, I forget, John, you brought it up, but the time for conversation is over. The time for, what was it? Like, what was the choice of words? Because it was so telling in it, like, this is a guy that just wanted to kick down a door and, like, crack some heads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was.
And he says to Bucky, like, you want his blood on your hands.
Well, that scene especially. There's the scene where he's looking at the clock and he's pacing and you see him and he has like a no, this is all wrong. And that is not normal behavior right there. And I think as Bucky points out later, it's like there's something not right with that guy. And I think the implication is, I mean, at the very least, some form of like PTSD probably from his, you know, combat experience, which.
Yeah,
I think is an interesting. It's an interesting angle in and of itself because there, you know, obviously there is so much of that. It is so prevalent. And I think I could also understand that both the military would want to gloss that over by putting him forward as the golden boy without really addressing the fact that this guy has suffered some, you know, some traumatic issues and that Walker thinks the serum will be his redemption, you know, for whatever happened that he didn't get right.
Dan, is it your argument that systemic use of force gets excused by the people who sort of set it all up?
Is that an actual question or just a rhetorical question?
Yeah, right, or
just a thought.
I'm not sure.
Just a thing. Let me just throw that out there.
Question.
Yeah. Don't look at the date and look at the news. But seems like that's a
hard
thing.
To imagine that could happen, right?
Yeah. Right. To be perfectly honest, I have a hard time separating the actions of this Cap from the real world. And I think you're right about the PTSD thing. I'm also not sure it's an excuse.
Oh, no. I would not make an excuse at all. Yeah, no.
While I accept that that's a thing, you know, the expression of violence that we see here, even before he just murdered somebody in cold blood.
Yeah.
Even before that, his excessive use of force was deplorable, for sure.
Yeah.
And Lamar, rest in peace, kept trying to keep him on the straight and narrow. Like, you're a good guy. You keep making the right choices in combat. You know, like, when the heat is on, you make the right choice. Maybe. I don't know. He definitely doesn't seem to be, as far as we've seen, you know, on this show. Maybe the mantle of being Cap is a step too far. Maybe it's something that, honestly, even Zemo does not besmirch Steve. Even it's like, okay, well, the Steve Rogers, sure.
Yeah.
That's great. But there's never been another one on him, and he's kind of not wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I do not like that guy. Do not be a Zemo. But he's not wrong that, like, Steve was the only guy that could get away with this.
He's the exception that proves the rule, yeah.
Yeah. Also, right. Exactly. And I kind of want to take that to pivot into that moment where he picks up a vial of super soldier serum. And do you guys think he was going to take it or not?
I don't know. I mean, I thought it would end up with him taking it eventually because, you know, yeah. Chekhov's super soldier serum. But they had it. There be a moment of indecision where it's like that's his pivot point of whether he can, like, walk this back or not.
Yeah.
I loved it. A, he's so true to his word. He's obviously a terrorist. Very, very bad guy. And it seems like he's sort of tempted and then finds himself in his contempt, which is not a noble thing at all. But his goal is to smash all of those vials and to end super soldiers and superheroes, and he sticks to it. And I don't admire it, but I respect the writing of the character. They kept him true to himself. And later on, he asks Sam, like, what would you do? And Sam is immediately like, no, nope, not going to do it. And later on, John asks Lamar, and Lamar was like, yeah, hell yeah, and I'd do it. And that is, I feel, the distinction that we're making between our kind of two sets of characters here.
Essentially, you want, it's kind of like the old saying that, like, the perfect person for the job is the one who doesn't want it.
Right.
Yeah. And I think you're right. Like, I like that Zemo's consistent in this, that jibes with last week where, you know, Bucky points out he's a bad guy, but at least he's got a code, right? Like, and we know, and I love the bit this week about him. They're like, you shot Nagel. He's like, do we really have to relitigate what may or may not have happened? No, you straight shot the man.
How screwed up was that? That is like, that is some gaslighting that is next level. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
we were all there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get a little bit of that in Civil War, like when he talks to T'Challa about, like, you know, I'm sorry about your father. He seemed like a good man with a dutiful son. And it's like, don't give me that crap.
Right.
You killed him, okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I do think he was sincere about that, but I don't think
he didn't care about Nagel. Oh, yeah. Slight level of regret for T'Chaka, but it's minor, still like you killed him.
Right. I mean, it's a sociopathic response, right? It's like, you know, he seemed like a fine person, but he was in my way. And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Also, I'll point out on the side note, which several people on Twitter also pointed out, the candy that he has, that's not Turkish Delight. It's not.
I didn't think so.
No,
I've never had it.
I've never had it either, but I've seen it. It's like white. It's a white powdered thing. It's ironically, I was reading a book for a different show this week that's a murder mystery, and there is a bit about Turkish Delight in it, because there's a bit where it'd be like powdered in arsenic instead of sugar around the edge as a murder weapon. And I was like, yes, that's what it's like. It's like a little cube that's covered in powdered sugar. Yeah.
That's what the White Witch gives to. I was going to say it's a dark sequel to the line the Witch in the Wardrobe,
dark too.
Yeah, which is also dark. Turkish Delight is legitimately delicious, but it's its own thing. I happen to like black licorice, which it doesn't taste like, but it's one of those confections that is, if you didn't grow up with it and if you didn't have it, you may find a little bit revolting, but I kind of love that he's just using it to, like, you know, buy off these kids. I think it's cool. It's got a little bit of a, I don't know what I'm going to say here, like a Little Orphan Annie kind of feel. Like, he's got like a little bit of a Daddy Warbucks vibe going on with this.
I think the worst part, though, is that, like, not only is he the creepy guy, you know, offering candy, but he walks in like singing really creepily, creepily.
Also,
like, why would you take candy from that guy?
Did you guys grow up with Baba Black Sheep as like a thing that your parents would sing to you?
I definitely had heard it as a kid.
I think I learned that later, though. I don't think I learned it, I heard it as a kid. I probably heard it I mean, there was that show. There was that Baba Black Sheep show, and I think I probably investigated it like when that show came out. Although I don't know what, I don't know how old I was when that show came out.
So my parents were sending that to me a lot, and it when I remembered it, I don't know when, like 20 years ago, whenever it came back to my mind, I looked it up, and it's an anti-taxation song. It's basically libertarian.
Well, it makes like sense. Propaganda.
Yes. Have you any wool? There was a tax on the whatever. There was a tax on wool. Whatever. It's yes, sir. Yes, sir. Two bags full. Like there's a whole thing about it, which is weird and creepy. And you sing it to children, which is, you know, probably not great. There is no way anybody in history has walked up to a group of children singing a nursery rhyme and it has been a good thing.
Holding like it just candy.
Holding candy. Yeah, right, it's right. Like, oh my God.
It sort of reminded me, I don't know if you ever seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, that used to scare the crap out of me.
Yeah. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
It is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, right? With a guy, with a creepy guy who looks like a, you know, like from some sort
stovetop.
Of
yeah.
Frightening Eastern European carnival. Steals the children using a van and candy, basically.
Honestly, I have not seen that in years.
Yeah.
Give me anyway, nightmares. What I'm saying is keep your children away from guys with fur collared coats. Yeah, I guess.
Good tip. A couple other things happened in this episode. Well, there's a big one I want to talk to you in a little bit, but first I want to talk about a couple other things. Sharon reappears in this episode. Anything to unconvince you that she's the power broker?
Not really.
Yeah, there's not much. She's got satellites. She waltzes through a bunch of guards at one point. Right. Yeah. I don't know. Her agenda is still unclear.
Right.
Only that she's boring.
I mean, they don't give her a lot to do here.
Yeah.
Like, this is, she's sitting, a plot device.
Right, exactly. She's sitting there drinking a whiskey and looking at her iPad, which is 100% not a thing that I ever do.
You never track down people when I ask you to.
The nerve.
Well, we're not going to talk about that one time, but sure. I don't get it. I don't think that there's enough leverage behind that character to make that a payoff worth having. Although, and I think we'll maybe get to this soon, it shows feels a little bit clumsy at times. So, who knows?
Yeah.
I do want to call out one other thing I really liked. Carly and Sam's conversation the first time around, I think, is great.
Brilliant. Loved it.
I think...
Yes.
They have a great rapport, which really works in this. Like, you need that in this show. You need them to have some sort of chemistry, even if it's antagonism. And I like how they sort of go back and forth with each other. And they are very similar in terms of, like, you know, their goals. I was curious a little bit, and again, this may be sort of rough edges, but she mentions at one point, like, the people I'm fighting are the same people who are coming after your home. And I was like, how does she know that? There was a connections thing that I cannot tell if it is merely like hand waving because we need to get to this point, or whether there's an implication that she is somehow connected to something larger, because she talks about all of them being placed in the same camp. And like, I thought we were chosen because we all had the same views and we all met each other. And I'm like, the way it's phrased, or the fact that it's even brought up, struck me as interesting. She has that, and then she manages to find Sarah too and call her up. And I was like, are we meant to believe that there is something, some other, I don't know, that they have more resources, or that they are working for someone else or something, or is that just sort of to get to the plot points? I don't know.
I do feel, John, I know you want to chime in here, but I do feel like there's a lot here that's been elided or skipped, and honestly, I think every show we watch, we're like, you know what? You don't need 22 episodes. Maybe this one you could have used a few more, because I want to know. How does she have this capability? What is that? What does that mean that she can just call up Sarah? Also, Sarah, awesome, by the way. We haven't seen her very much, but pretty much every word out of her mouth is just killer. I love that she doesn't know what the hell's going on, but immediately she's like, no, my brother's not working for that man. And I love her, specifically love her line about, it's a little on the nose, to be honest. It's like, let's put this into the episode, but the notion of America, they don't care about my reality. Yeah.
They don't care about my family. Yeah. Why should I care about their mascot?
Why would I care about the mascot? And like, honestly, just the use of the word mascot to describe Cap, you know, new Cap, new Cap with an N-U, like not even spelt out, you know, like the most crappy version of it. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I don't really know how it's all tied together. I wish I did. And yeah. John, sorry.
It's okay. I wasn't really going to say much. I mean, but we all watched a video online about the idea, the possibility that there had been a vaccine or like a pandemic sort of
storyline
that had been in this originally and had to be removed at a later date because we ended up having an actual pandemic. And I don't know if that would have helped explain all of it. I don't even know if that was actually necessarily a real thing or how far they got with it. But it definitely does feel like there might have been something that was in here that has been taken out.
Right. Yeah. I guess.
And it's, you know, and it's six episodes instead of eight. WandaVision was eight, right?
WandaVision was nine, but they were on average shorter.
So I wonder if it had been originally intended to be that long.
I think it was always intended to be six is my understanding, but it does feel like you could have maybe stuffed another 5-10 minutes into some of these episodes and benefited from it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It was also supposed to be first.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot of a fight kind of show more than I think WandaVision invites you to be a little bit more cerebral than I suspect the show is intended to be.
No, I think it's very much intended to be like an international spy thriller with superheroes, which I think it mainly delivers on, but that's definitely a different type of show for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, if just to John's point previously, if they'd written a pandemic and then they pulled it, good for them. Ultimately, these shows they want to make you happy. They don't want to make you sad. And
nothing made me happier than the blood coming off the shield at the end there.
Well, you have to choose where you're going to pull your punches, right?
Like, sure,
did they come down on Black Lives Matter? Yes, they did. A lot, I think, with that Cap move. Did they want to also throw in a pandemic?
It becomes too much.
It's too much, right? Yeah. So let's try to. I mean, clearly, New Cap is doing policing wrong, like real wrong, and that's a thing that is worth discussing in popular culture for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they did it. Do you want to add a pandemic on top of that? Sure. I mean, as a background, when that's not happening in real life, sure. And when it's also happening in real life, no. Like,
it just makes it, you know, makes it harder when you have to then make sure that your portrayal is reflects reality.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You still want to provide some degree of escapism, I think, fundamentally. And
exactly.
You want to be able to comment on events without feeling beholden to like real world events.
Yeah. Right.
Which is what comic books and sci-fi and a bunch of other media that we read and, you know, Dan, you even create, that's what it's about. Right. It's meant to be a reflection and commentary. Sometimes you don't want it to be like you don't want to put on the high beams at times, right? And if they dialed that back, I get it. And I think that's probably was, is the result maybe as compelling as what they originally planned it to be? I don't know. Also, we can only talk about what we've seen and what's on the screen. And I don't know. Pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it feels a little incomplete or a little messy.
Yeah, yeah. I think we have this. Before we sort of get into some of that a little bit more, I do want to mention, I think, what is perhaps one of the standout sequences this week, which is the fight with Adora Milaje, which is, I think, fantastic. I think that whole scene is great. There's a lot happening in it. And I want to, before we like start to discuss it, I want to like, again, kind of linking into exactly what Guy was just talking about. Let's keep in mind that this is a superhero show. We only want to go so far down the rabbit hole and sort of drawing a direct line to the real world of some of these things. But I think, first of all, what I love about this is the Adora Milaje, you know, first of all, they show up. They're like, our jurisdiction's wherever we want to be, and we're taking Zemo. John Walker basically is the American tourist talking too loud at people and assuming they will understand him. And then he does two things that I think are particularly egregious.
Oh, yeah.
The first of which I thought was actually a clever bit of writing in some ways. He mentions they should put down the pointy sticks. And I felt like...
Yeah.
Wow, that is some, I mean, it's got like a real colonialist attitude
so
to it,
bad.
Right?
The right, whole right, thing, right. Everything he does is like,
right,
huh,
but then particularly
I'm John
that
Walker,
line,
Captain America. It's
hi, I'm John Walker, Captain America.
You think these people don't know
you're
who you are?
You're wearing a flag on yourself.
These people know exactly who you are. Like, don't.
Yeah. I'm America. Yeah. The pointy stick thing I thought just really stuck out to me because it did have that really uncomfortable vibe. Of like,
yeah,
you're
it was
just
like
people with pointy sticks. Do you know who Wakandans are? They have like,
he was literally using his words to draw an incredibly racist cartoon with a bone through the nose. Like it was horrible. Like I don't know how to describe how badly he screwed up.
Well, and then he puts a hand on her, and it's like, first of all, I will say that was awkward in every sense. I feel like even Wyatt Russell was like, I don't know how to do this and not feel weird and condescending about it, because it's like, why would you do that? Why would you touch someone?
Yeah. It feels like Wyatt must have just coached to do like 50 takes. Like,
I'm just sort of like flopping my arm on your shoulder. That's where we're going.
Yeah. Just to be perfectly clear, Cap, Wyatt Russell's Cap is awful. Wyatt Russell is killing it. Man, that guy is doing such
he's doing a great
amazing,
job with that role. I will say,
amazing job. Yeah. Like, and part of it, at least for me, is that, I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan, and I can see little Kurt Russell things in him that make me either like him or get where he's coming from, because I've watched, I don't know, Escape from New York like a million times. Of course, it's Kurt Russell. I think there's that familiarity with a character archetype being played as the villain is an incredible casting choice. Like, the little tics that he has feel very sort of American hero kind of thing, like Kurt Russell is being.
And when you him up against the, like, I mean, he looks very much the part, where like it's almost as though they were like, who can we find that looks kind is like reminiscent of Steve, right? He's blonde, he's clean cut, you know, he's got that whole, like, he could be a bad photocopy of Steve.
Exactly, you know what I mean? Like, it's so close and it's so earnest and yet very, very wrong, and he's just doing an amazing job. Anyway, he lays hands on Oyo, which is not a good choice.
Not a good idea.
Yeah, so that whole fight basically is fantastic. You know, Sam tries to warn him off. You might want to fight Bucky before you tangle with Adora Milaje. we should do something. Looking strong, John.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, and this is, I think this is also important to point out, the stakes in this story, in this fight, and in a medium like superhero comics, movies, TV, etc., a fight is a conversation. Like,
right.
And you have to always keep in mind what the stakes are. I don't think anybody in this fight is fighting to kill.
No.
And that is important.
Right.
Because of where it goes. You know, there are some moments where it seems as though almost, like, you know, one of the Dora Milaje sort of pulls up, like, it looks like maybe they're about to stab Walker. I don't think they are.
They're not gonna, no.
They just want him incapacitated and out of their way.
They want to shame him.
Yeah,
they are out to shame that guy, and he deserves to be shamed.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they pin the shield to the table at one point, which is just awesome. Like, they throw the spear through the straps, essentially, and, like, catch his arm in it so he can't get out, right? And he basically, the whole first shot where, like, he gets punched several times, and then he hits the spear that was already thrown into the pillar and falls over. Oh, my God. It's hilarious and terrible. And at the end, I think there's a really telling moment where he kind of looks very shell-shocked, and he kind of mutters, they weren't even super soldiers.
Yeah.
And I think that's the moment.
He got his ass kicked.
Yeah, where you get Walker. Walker's like the guy who was like the top of his class in high school and an All-American football player and everything, and he gets out into like college or the real world and discovers like he was big fish in a small pond. And now he is basically the bottom of the ladder.
Yeah.
Man, I think that's great. Yeah, big fish in a small pond. I think that's right.
He's just, so much of this is out of his league.
Yeah, he's outclassed.
Yeah.
100% outclassed. Yeah.
I mean, even Sam gets beat up, but manages to kind of hold his own.
Well, he's not, they don't weigh in until later, and they're also like, they're mostly trying to stop things
exactly.
As opposed to.
He grabs one of the spears, and then they just. They put him down. If you notice, he puts up his arms and they just kind of whack him a few times and he falls down.
Man,
it's like, yeah,
that's gonna hurt.
Yeah, this is not gonna go well for me. So,
but the most contentious obvious shot or scene within this fight is the scene where Io basically deactivates Bucky's arm while he's trying to talk her down. And I think again, that's important. He is clearly trying to just sort of like bat away what she is doing without getting involved. I don't think either of them wants to hurt each other.
No, they don't.
And it's telling because of that scene that we have at the very top of the episode, where it's clear that Io has sort of, you know, helped him throughout this process of ridding him of the Winter Soldier programming, that they have a relationship, right? Like they are friends. They know each other. And I think that's why there's been so much read into this scene. And I think it's a great bit because it's complex. There's a ton of stuff going on here. On the one hand, you know, the Wakandans, I think, are very pragmatic and reasonably so, that they don't want to bestow the superpowered, you know, vibranium arm on someone who could potentially be a threat. And it's like, all right, I can see that. Like, there's a certain degree of, like, pragmatism to that. On the other hand, it is both extremely uncomfortable to have somebody removed of their prosthetic, right, in a fight.
Yeah.
Like, it is a transgression. Even if it is a very pragmatic thing to do, especially in a fight where it doesn't feel like the stakes necessarily warrant it. He's not fighting to kill, that she's not fighting to kill, right? Like, it just sort of takes him out of it. And like beating up Walker, it's a bit humiliating, like, or at least it robbing him of his dignity in that moment.
Right.
And then the third element is that they are, again, if they are friends, that is a betrayal, I feel like. You know, I cannot imagine being in that situation with somebody who you feel like you've seen me at my most vulnerable. You have like, you know, we have some sort of bond, or I felt like we did. And you have just sort of done something to me that feels very unthinkable.
Right.
John, do you want to? I have opinions, but I'm curious as to
it's all of that. I mean, and I think it all works.
Yeah, I agree.
Same.
And they don't talk about it much, other than, you know, Sam asks Bucky if he knew that they could do that, and he's like, no. So you get a little bit of his reaction there, but they don't really bring it up after that. And they convey enough of it through that moment and his look when it drops off, that like all of that stuff is happening at the same time.
He, literally she disarms him, which I wish I had a better way of expressing, but I mean, that's what happens. And just to be clear, that is a prosthetic arm. That is a killing machine that they installed and they bestowed upon him. At the very beginning of the episode, we hear her say, I will not let you hurt anybody. And there's a certainty in that. And it has to be true, right? Like, well, we've got a killing machine. Like, this guy literally killed our king and blew up a lot of people, and he's clearly, you know, a programmed super soldier.
Bucky didn't do that. T'Chaka, that was
Zemo. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. But he is a killing machine. You're totally right. Yeah.
Strangled Tony Stark's parents. I mean, what do you want? Do you want to pick one? Because it's not going to look good.
Killed that guy in the hallway just for seeing him kill other people.
Right. Yeah. Pick one. Pick anyone. It makes sense that you would put in a safeguard of like, okay, we've got a super soldier on our hands. Like a guy that... we only let our king eat the heart-shaped flower? Like the purple flower that bestows power. Yeah. It's like, you know, we get one Black Panther. Like, that's what we do. And you're just running around being all juiced up, murdering people? Not great. But we will take care of you, because it seems like you're a good guy that's gone down a bad road. I don't think that this was a betrayal at all. If anything, I think that keeping in mind that this is a superhero show and not very, very specifically not a real life thing.
Yeah, right.
I think this was akin to being slapped in the face. And she literally tells him, "Bass, damn you," which is, you know, the god, like, "God damn you,
right,
you big jerk," and he freed Zemo.
Yeah,
who did horrible things?
And again,
they could have killed him. They honestly, if they'd just showed up and killed him, I would have been like, "Yeah, well, that made sense."
I hate to see it.
I disagree slightly that I do think it can be both. I think it can be a betrayal and can be a pragmatic thing to do. I mean, because the point of the line where she says, "I won't let you hurt anybody," makes a lot of sense in that context of we are unsure as to where your loyalties lie right now. But since that was, you know, 6 years ago, times have changed. The fact that they kind of left a back door in his arm does feel to me a little bit like it's uncomfortable. And it should be uncomfortable. Again, I don't think that there's anything.
It wasn't 6 years ago for Bucky, though.
That's fair.
Right.
But you know, it's like we let you drive out of drive off the lot, but we still have a kill switch for your car, you know? I don't know. Like, what if somebody threw Charles Xavier out of his wheelchair? Like, I mean, he's a superpower from you, but that's not cool.
Okay. That's a very different. Very different.
It's a comic book, so I'm not going to draw a strong line to it, but I'm, you know, I think you could have people arguing from like the perspective of the disabled community that there is also something uncomfortable about that, and there should be, is what my point is.
Yes, 100%. I agree with that completely. The thing is, Bucky could have kept fighting. He's an incredible fighter. He doesn't need that prosthetic in order to be a great fighter. And he stopped because, like I said, I think that was the slap in the face. Like, oh, you mean this? Like, you're serious?
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that was the moment. Like, oh, I know we're having fun. I just two seconds ago cracked a joke about John getting his ass kicked because screw that guy. And now we're doing this. I'm like, you guys, I misread the situation. You're very, very serious, and I'm gonna stop. Like, he just stops. If he wasn't
into the fight anyway in the beginning. Like,
he wasn't.
He didn't really want to get involved. He was probably enjoying seeing them beat up Walker.
100%. Yeah. And if he was in Winter Soldier mode, he would have just gone and murdered a whole bunch of people. Yeah. But he wasn't. And I think that scene played poorly to many people. And ultimately, I feel was meant to be more of a slap in the face than a real betrayal and something that we need to dwell on.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's okay for it to be
more than one thing. Come down on the characters in the scene to have different understandings of what happened, and I like that. I think it points to complex writing, and you can hold multiple ideas in your head at the same time. And I think that was really well executed for all of that.
There's an interesting thing that I wonder if it will come up again when Sam is talking to Zemo about the super soldier serum, and he says, Zemo gives his opinion, and then he says, well, what about Bucky? Mm-hmm. And Zemo almost looks like he's like, ooh, yeah. I mean, like, he almost has a bit of a hesitation about, I mean, mm-hmm. he doesn't seem like he would, but he almost seems like he thinks that Bucky is a good guy and that Bucky has been a victim and has been victimized by him. And I don't know if that'll come back up again or not, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And also, Zemo's hanging out in a bathrobe of the time. By the way, I love that they recorded a lot of this show, or they filmed a lot of the show in our recording studio.
It was very nice of them. I love that. So just going to do that head tilt thing.
Yeah. I really did like that, because that's a weird little affectation that he has, and I'm like,
and cool. He stops doing it. Like, he's doing it when it's dead, and then he clearly notices it and then straightens his head out, which is pretty funny. There's some good stuff in there. All right, we are running out of time. We should probably do, I know this was a big episode, I feel like, and again, a lot of stuff to talk about, but I think we should probably do our rating. John, you want to go ahead?
I don't think it's any surprise that I will give it a biff. I gave last week's a biff, I believe, and this is definitely better than last week's. But a lot going on, and that ending is just so powerful that it's I think most of the rest of it makes up for the little hiccups here and there, the little thing, little points that are awkward. But and I don't think we really even talked about it. Like, what? There's that weird moment where Sharon tells them where Walker is, and they fly off, like, and they go off. They're like talking to Carly, and then they run off. Like, why are they? It doesn't really
make sense. They've got Carly. Carly is their target, the person they're trying to talk down. Why do they care where Walker has gone?
Exactly. I mean, I guess the implication is that Walker is going to cause a whole bunch of trouble, which is exactly what happens.
You just needed like a sentence in there.
They need to go. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I think the rest of it even makes up for that, and then you put this ending on the end, and it's way over the top for me.
Yeah. Guy?
The show as a whole is a biff. I would recommend the show to anybody that listens to our dumb podcast. I really, really would.
That's good, because they're listening right now.
If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't watched this show, go ahead and watch it.
Don't make me call your sisters.
Wow.
I don't have one.
Neither do I. Good luck.
It's going to be difficult. Yeah.
I know. The pause on that joke was actually figuring out the math on that. This episode is wonderful, and I'll tell you why I like it so much. I like it for two reasons. The scene where Sam and Carly talk is brilliant. That is some hero stuff, like real legitimate hero work. And the final shot, final scene with Cap is it's a piece of work trying to tell a story that is, I think, not only pertinent and relevant, but kind of needs to be framed a little bit like this so that we can start accepting that as a really, really bad thing. We literally see the symbol of America bathed in blood, which is not comfortable for anybody.
Yeah.
But it is, it's right there on Disney Plus. And I think that's remarkable in and of itself. This episode, a biff. Definitely. Definitely a biff. Are there issues with it? As, like, you know, 8, 10, 20 years from now, if we go back and watch these shows, will we think that they are as successful? Probably not. A lot of faults with them. But right now, I think it landed. And I think it landed really, really well. And, yeah, I think it's a oddly timely and significant work.
Yeah. No, I think your point about the symbolism at the end is well taken. I think it's a lot of the episode rides on that. You know, we've been, part of the muddiness in the show has been trying to say, who are the bad guys? And I think the answer is, there are a lot of, there's a lot of gray. There's a lot of gray in this. And I liked also something that we didn't mention. Carly espouses the same view that Sam had last week about maybe the shield should be destroyed. Maybe it's, you know, essentially a relic of an era that's gone. And I think, you know, wrestling with the current state of America as an, you know, a symbol in the world is surprisingly more than I thought necessarily this show would go into, right? Like, you know, that is interesting. I think Winter Soldier kind of skimmed that line slightly by, you know, kind of obfuscating it through Hydra, but like was kind of pointing towards the fact that Steve didn't really understand a world where, or, you know, had trouble functioning in a world where stuff was gray.
Project Insight was effectively the Patriot Act, right? Like, that's,
I mean, but with some minor adjustments. Anyways,
book.
I agree. I think this is a biff. I was concerned after last week. I felt like this week was a much more solid episode. Again, it knew what it was trying to do, and it executed that in mostly pretty good fashion. So I have no hesitations about calling this one a biff. Like you guys, I think my biggest concern is with two episodes left, it feels like there is a lot to do, and I'm interested to see.
Which is why I don't really think we're going to spend a huge amount of time on a flashback next week. But
we'll I don't know about a huge amount of time, but I am curious to see if they decide Walker's character needs some, if not, I don't want to give him an excuse. I agree with Guy. I don't think it is an excuse, but there is a rationale or a backstory to that character that seems like perhaps it needs to be filled out a little bit. Just to see where he is coming from and how he got to the point where he is now. But yeah, we'll see what happens next week. I think that's all we got. I'd like to thank, as always, my co-host, John Maltz. Thanks for being here.
What's with all the knives?
What is that? That line was weird, too.
It was, well, I thought it was great. I thought it was funny. And it's just, but it's so weird that it comes right before Lamar gets killed.
Yeah, the delivery on it is strange. The delivery is strange, and the...
Because he's a little twitchy.
He's a little weird. Guy English, always a pleasure.
Captain Canada, coming at you.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we appreciate your support. As always, you can find us at BiffCast on Twitter. You can send us an email, biff@theincomparable.com, and we will see you next week.